Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, MASH fans. I am your host, Anthony, and welcome back to the Best Care Anywhere podcast. Before we get going, I need to address some allegations. I was at a Boy Scout training this week, or a Scouts BSA training this week for adult leadership. I will have everyone know that the rhinestone that I wore in my belly button offended nobody. And I would like to have those complaints addressed and dealt with promptly. Joining me as per usual, with a little work he could have the jowls of a goddess, our very own Barracuda, it's Ethan Wilson.
I actually have the jowls of a goddess, but they aren't my jowls, you know what I'm saying?
Huh.
I stole a goddess's jowls.
I feel like I'm going to have to cut in Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs right there.
Oh, God. Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah. You know what? I want you to know that this podcast is so important to me that I am sitting here with you on St. Patrick's Day.
Ah, yes, the Irish national holiday. Yes, yes, yes.
Yep, right after this, as is tradition, I will be getting into a fist fight with one close family member, followed by one stranger, and then breaking into the liquor store and stealing all of the Guinness that's left on the shelves. As is, of course, tradition.
Yes. Did you partake of any corned beef or any other such delicacies of your land?
No, you see, the true Irishman waits until the day after St. Patrick's Day to buy the corned beef and cabbage because it's on sale.
Mm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the British took our money. Or at least that's
the
what we
British
blame it on.
The British took our money. Well, excellent. I had corned beef today because my mom made some in the crock pot. It's so good.
I love corned beef and cabbage. It's just, I have it once a year, and I have it on this day, and I love it so much. But in any case, you know, the King Neptune outfit I wore offended nobody and covered everything below my waist.
Including the pelvic region.
Including the pelvic region. Could you put that in italics? Just like underline
including
it.
Including the pelvic region, yes. Yeah. It's been a week. It has been simultaneously a stressful but very rewarding week, I would say. I was not joking, as some of you on Twitter saw. I was at a scout training this weekend when I realized I completely forgot to post asking for responses and thoughts on this episode. So I apologize for that, but hey, you got to see my fabulous, beautiful face. Other than that, any major update, life updates other than St. Paddy's Day?
Honestly, I'm here. I've been enjoying my quote-unquote spring break.
Mm.
I've just been trying to get work and school and hobbies done. It's just, you know, I'm living the dream one nightmare at a time.
There you go.
Yeah. Kind
of the same. It's about to get very busy very quick, both from a hobbies and interests standpoint, because I was going to follow up and I didn't. The reason I'm getting all this scout training is terrifying. It was confirmed between last episode and this episode by the powers that be that I, Anthony Marlott, will be taking over the position of scoutmaster for the unit that I eagled out of 11 years ago now. God damn it. So yeah, that's happening. And contrary to what we will learn later in the episode, I believe I mentioned this in a previous episode, there is canonically a scoutmaster at the 4077th. I'll give you three guesses who it is, Ethan.
Henry Blake.
Henry would be a great scoutmaster.
Henry would be the best scoutmaster.
Henry would be that scoutmaster in the best way possible. No, imagine Henry Blake as scoutmaster. Now imagine the exact opposite type of scoutmaster. Who's the scoutmaster in the unit?
Oh, no. Frank Burns is not a scoutmaster.
He was. And I quote, till the little ingrate set fire to his pants.
I bet we'll get, that we'll get got there a eventually. Corner cut off their
firemanship.
Their firemanship. Yep. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure firemanship because, okay, so again, we're not even to the episode. We're going on a scout tangent. For those scouts in the audience, you know this. You get a card for knife use and a card that says you are responsible with fire so that you can use knives, saws, and axes in camp without direct over-the-shoulder supervision, and you can manage and put out the fires in camp without, again, direct over-the-shoulder supervision. Injuring yourself or misuse of a knife, which you're wondering, like, oh, even if they cut themselves, they shouldn't be able to cut themselves if they're using the knife properly. Misuse of a knife in any way will lose a corner off that card. Once you've lost all four corners, the card's gone. They actually don't really recommend you do that. They recommend it's like a take the card, have a discussion about safety, give the card back, and if that happens too many times, whatever. Same thing. I had a quarter cut off mine literally the day I earned it, so, you know.
No, I like the corner system, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I think it works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I believe the fireman shit is the same thing, except because it's fire, it's an immediate revoke. There's no... I've heard of some adult leaders will take out their Bic lighter and burn a corner off, which I kind of love. But, I think the fireman shit being an immediate revocal, especially when you live in a state like California, probably a good idea.
Well, you got to think of it like this. I mean, to get a corner cut off your totin' shit, you have to, like, you know,
you have
do
to be
something
doing something
stupid.
Pretty goddamn stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you do something stupid with fire, that's like game over. That's like, mm-hmm. like what in the world? Like, you started a brush fire. Oh, fuck. I started a brush fire. My father started to brush fire.
Yeah, that did happen. Yeah.
I'm going to have to revoke his fireman shit, aren't I?
Yep, you are. Well, before we go off on any more tangents this episode, let us dive right into it. Can you tell we're excited, audience, for Season 2, Episode 18, Operation Noselift, directed by Hay Averback, written by Eric Tarlov and Paul Richards, aired January 19th, 1974. There has been a lot of preparation going into this one. This one is immediately following For Want of a Boot, which was a decent episode, and then immediately previous to that, if I'm remembering correctly, is Henry in Love. So it's been an interesting series of episodes. We open, as we are to do, and I said to Ethan right as I was pulling everything up, I didn't catch this in my first watch through. The opening shot is of the camp, and we zoom in on what is supposed to be, I believe, Henry's tent with the little commanding officer sign out front of it. But then we transition scene-wise into his office, which that's not where his office is. Just a weird little point of contention I'll throw in there. But we see...
I'm glad you noticed that, because I sure wouldn't have.
So we see that Henry is dictating a letter to HQ in response to a complaint filed by none other than Majors Houlihan and Burns about Henry's conduct unbecoming an officer. And we get to hear a little bit about what that conduct is. Would you like to rattle off Henry's quote unquote offenses that we hear?
Well,
or as described by Henry.
During our recent Mardi Gras celebration, he may or may not have appeared as King Neptune. However,
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
However, the costume of said King Neptune covered everything from the waist down, including the pelvic region.
Including the pelvic region, yes.
Furthermore, the rhinestone...
And to wit,
what, sir?
To wit.
The rhinestone he wore in his belly button offended no one.
Now, stop right there. I feel like we as MASH fans do not do this enough. I want you to stop, if you're listening to this podcast, pull up a picture of McLean Stevenson, and I want you to imagine him shirtless from the waist up with a rhinestone in his belly button.
way ahead of you.
You got that image in your head? Good. Now you have that. That's in now that you've thought of that and pictured that, guess what? Your brain has stored that subconsciously, and it can, in fact, pop up in your dreams and nightmares. So you're welcome for that. There's no extra charge. That's a free service we've done for you. So there you go. Write us if you have dreams or nightmares about that. I mean, I'm curious now. So yeah, you know, apparently McLean, there was a Mart.
McLean Stephen may no longer be with us, but he has given us the gift of imagining him as the King Neptune, topless in our dreams. And if that isn't a legacy, what is?
Exactly. So they were celebrating Mardi Gras. Do you? I feel like I only have a knowledge of Mardi Gras because my mom has a dream of going to New Orleans at some point.
Why does she want to get shot?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. But does anyone celebrate Mardi Gras like genuinely outside of New Orleans? Like, and I don't mean like Ash Wednesday. Right after, like, I'm talking about specifically Cajun food, beignets, jambalaya, like Mardi Gras. I know some people do.
Isn't Mardi Gras like sort of tied to Lent in a weird, fucked up way?
I'm gonna beg forgiveness from my grandmother. So, like, I retained some of the information from going to Catholic Mass, but if I get it wrong, please do not send a lightning bolt through the ceiling. I believe Ash Wednesday, whenever that falls, is the start of Lent, which continues through Pentecost Sunday, which is Easter or is right before Easter.
Okay.
So Fat Tuesday is the big day of excess right before you give up things for Lent. I believe. Do not quote me on this. I did not think to look this up because I didn't figure we'd be diving that deep into it. But
you know, I should know this. It's like kind of a plot point in one of my favorite movies of all time, which is of course Easy Rider.
Oh God,
I'll rope you into it one day. So how did? Okay, so Fat Tuesday, you know Lent, yada yada yada. How did those New Orleans bastards make it this?
Make it Mardi Gras?
Yes.
I don't know the exact history of Mardi Gras, and I from what little I do know, it's actually really interesting, because you have to remember, New Orleans is like the meeting point of like four or five different cultures. Spanish, French, Southern America...
British,
a little bit of British, the natives in the region, so that kind of formed that Creole, Cajun, and there's a difference between the two. I don't know what it is. Please don't kill me. That kind of like Frenchish language, like that whole New Orleans is a fascinating place historically, genuinely, but I think. Mardi Gras became like a mixture of like Carnival from Europe and the celebration right before Lent, and I think it's just a mixture of different things that just kind of became unique to that region. So, yeah, I don't know, because you see, I would liken like the origins of this is going to be a really weird tangent, and I don't know if it's actually genuinely the same thing or related. You have Mardi Gras, which probably came from the kind of like Carnival celebrations like you see in Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, I think it's just a mixing of things, and I could totally pull it up right now, but you know, that this is not a Mardi Gras podcast. It is a
Now, now, dear audience, I know what you're thinking. Oh my God, we're 10 minutes in, these assholes have been on five different tangents, and you're right. But I would remind you that you watched this episode too. If we just went through the episode, we would already be done. Do you want that? I mean, you should, but do you?
So I will say this. What information I have absorbed about Mardi Gras is essentially correct. Yay. Mardi Gras, also known as Shrove Tuesday, is the final day of Carnival before Ash Wednesday. Mardi Gras is French for Fat Tuesday, reflecting on the practice of the last night of consuming rich fatty foods in preparation for the fasting season of Lent. Look at that. I knew things and didn't know it. What do you know? But anyway.
I'm proud of you.
Side note, this is why you should be curious and study many different things, because I pieced together that explanation of Mardi Gras before I actually Googled what it was from just, like, general knowledge and, you know, things I could piece together from what I knew. Watch YouTube. Study things. Be curious. There you go. Anyway, back to Radar and Henry. So they are reading through the rhinestone that he wore in his belly button offended nobody. Radar confirms with Henry, is belly button one word or two? Ethan, is belly button one word or two?
Isn't belly button one of them hyphenated words? Like belly dash button?
No. Henry is correct.
I don't believe that.
It is two separate words. I Googled it. I've Googled it before and I Googled it today just to be absolutely sure. Belly button is in fact two words, and by God, Henry, if you have not given me the best way to remember that, the Lord gave us one belly and one button for said belly. Therefore, it is two words. Belly button. And that is such horse shit. But the fact that it's correct is great. If it were wrong, it'd be funny, but the fact that it's correct is...
We should do that with more body parts, like, you know,
no,
instead of
like
hear me out, instead of nasal passages, nose buttons.
No.
Instead of ear canal.
No.
Ear buttons.
No.
We have a lot of crevices.
Yeah, don't. Mm.
A lot of nooks and crannies, and we could just solve all that by just button.
So
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, unfortunately. So we see that as they are, as Henry is dictating this letter to Radar, a private is being detained by the camp military guard, military police, and being brought to Henry's office. This is Private Baker, played by Todd Sussman. And he is, long and short of it, he has been trying to escape camp multiple times, and we will come to find out the reason why is his dominant proboscis, or his large nose. The fun thing about his entrance into this scene is, Ethan,
yo,
did you catch, I would imagine it would be hard for you not to, did you catch that he is very much wearing a false nose in this episode?
Yeah, I'm a couple steps ahead of that.
Now, hang on. The best scene where it doesn't look completely bad is this one, which is saying something because it's still not great.
Well, in all fairness, I'm sure that when this aired in 74, it looked pretty good. Like, I'm sure it held up well to the televisions of the time.
Oh, 100%. And that's always the thing is... is this show was not meant to be what I think we mentioned this in the either with Mike watching the movie or on one of the other episodes with a guest. These episodes were not meant to be watched. It may have been 5 o'clock, Charlie, when we were talking about, you can see the actual pilot hunched down in the seat. These were not meant to be watched on 1080p televisions. Like, yeah, very clearly. It probably looked great and undetectable, but on my big monitor here. Yeah, that's fake.
Yeah, so. you can see where they blurred in the makeup around him, how you know, the gray, his skin's a little more gray around the eyes and mouth.
On a side note, well, I think the gray around his lips is stubble. Like you can imagine that's where he shaved and that's where
follicles. Well, you don't know. Yeah, but you can tell
the light, the color of that false nose is it's not green, but it's not the right color for the rest of his skin.
Another set was doing a production of The Wizard of Oz, and the props got mixed up, and they didn't find out until
they have the witches.
They had the witch's nose.
But weirdly, so again, random tangent. Sorry, audience. one of the hardest things in Hollywood until recently was like getting good looking prosthetics, because human skin is not just one color. Like, and I don't mean that in like a black or white or, you know, like skin tones. Like, if you look at someone's skin, it's not just flat off-white. It's not just flat chocolate brown. There's variation, and depending on the person, and did they just wake up? Have they been up? Have they been in the sun? Are they hydrated? Are they dehydrated? Are they sick? The skin is not a perfect uniform color. And it's only recently that the prosthetics makers in Hollywood have gotten really good at making false ears, false noses, complete. You've seen like the complete face mask that they do the little glue around the mouth and nose to make it like, think Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, that's a weird example, but I just thought of it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest, coolest like things to see how they do it in Hollywood is like monster makeup or movie makeup, or, you know, making you look like someone else. It's really good. Again, a side note, if you do not know, if me saying Mrs. Doubtfire made you go, huh, I wonder what that is, I want you to turn off this podcast and go watch Mrs. Doubtfire starring Robin Williams. It is a sin before Christ that you have not seen that movie, if you have not. So go do that. Come back.
I might also argue that listening to this podcast is a sin before Christ, but...
That's up to the individual. I would say the worst sin is not having watched Mrs. Doubtfire. But, Also, complete side note, you could not make Mrs. Doubtfire today because Robin Williams' character would go to prison immediately. But anyway. So, I'll ask you a question. Private Baker, played by Todd Sussman. Do you recognize Todd Sussman from anywhere?
I do not. Nothing springs to mind.
Do you recognize his voice from anywhere?
A little bit, now that you mention it.
You mentioned his voice because of something he said in last week's episode. Huh? And in episodes previous to this.
No, he is.
Attention,
not.
All personnel.
He is, oh my God.
He is the PA announcer.
I always thought, like, up until now, I was about 90% sure that it was, oh gosh, I'm going to hell for not knowing his name. Hold on,
Radar?
Give me a minute. Yeah.
No. Because you see Radar in scenes where the announcements are being said. Sometimes
well, no,
it
I'm
is
not
Radar.
Saying, I'm saying, I, oh, Gary Berghoff. I was like,
yeah,
I was,
Gary Berghoff.
Up until now, I was fairly certain it was Gary Berghoff just doing a voice.
And
sometimes
no.
I think that's part of it. Is that never it? Oh, okay.
No, Radar has done it. Gary Berghoff does announcements as Radar. But the ones that you hear that are like the snarky, like, Captain Mercer is leaving for Tokyo for his honeymoon at 0800 hours. Any lucky nurse wishing to be the bride? That's Todd Sussman.
Thank you, Todd.
There is another place you have heard his voice.
Oh, God.
More recently, and not in MASH. He did multiple voice lines for Townsfolk and Random Strangers in the first Red Dead Redemption game.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
This man is a hero.
Ethan and I are big fans of the two main big well-known Red Dead Redemption games. Shout out to my homies who know and respect Red Dead Revolver. If you have not, again, if you're not a video game person, that's okay. Watch, if you don't play it, watch a playthrough, someone you can tolerate playthrough beginning to end Red Dead Redemption. In fact, I might even... Red Dead Redemption and Red Dead Redemption 2 are probably the best stories in a video game probably ever, depending on your taste. If you're a fan of cowboy stuff, if you're a fan of a little bit of goofiness, watch someone play through Red Dead Redemption. It is a great story, and if you are a video game person and have not played Red Dead Redemption, do it.
Hey, you! Do you want to fucking ball your eyes out today? Then Red Dead Redemption is the game for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I won't. We won't say more. Or we'll spoil because this game is fabulous. Yep. So yeah, that is Todd Sussman. He also has roles in various other movies and TV shows over the years. The Taking of Phelim 123, which weirdly, really good action movie. Like really good. It came out in that time of like the Bourne Identity. Let's have a low-level terrorist take over a train where there's like a random ex-military badass, like, or cop. Yeah. I believe that's the one where the guy takes over the subway train. It's a good one. I haven't watched it in a while. Beverly Hills Cops 2, he's in. He's, I don't know what his character is in Coneheads, but he's in Coneheads. So yeah. In asking why Private Baker wants to leave, Henry expounds that we don't have it so bad here. We got The Thing and The Blob in the same week, which is not possible. The Thing everyone mostly thinks about is the 1980s The Thing, which was a adaptation remake of a 1950 or 51 film called The Thing. I can't remember the full name. It's The Thing that something something something. And then The Blob came out in 1958, which the original Blob, and then I believe there's the remake later, both excellent movies. They're like the good kitschy girl screams in terror as she's killed type horror movies, not like the borderline torture porn that some people have made recently. Mm-hmm. Ethan, are you a horror fan?
Not even
just while we're
nope.
Not even like old school, like 50s, 60s, like The Thing that broke out of the laboratory.
It's just not my vibe. It's not
fair.
Like I've tried, and you know, I'll like for a date, you know, something like that. I'll put up with it, but I just don't get
so
it.
you've heard me say this before. You know what my favorite horror movie is?
What's that?
It's not a horror movie. It's a TV series. It's Chernobyl.
Oh,
that's
God,
my
yeah.
That Chernobyl is my favorite horror movie. It's not a horror movie, but that's like that's how I like to feel suspense and scared. Is that I don't even know how to describe it, but the Chernobyl HBO miniseries is my favorite way to be scared. It's like, yeah, I love it. I love it so much. And it was also really well done.
Yeah, that was an absolutely incredible series.
Hi, we're not going to talk about this episode of MASH. We're just going to give you movie and video game recommendations the whole time.
Yep. Sergeant Baker needs a nose job next time on the Best Care Anywhere podcast. Da 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 da.
So Henry sends Baker to Father Mulcahy, where this is where Baker admits that his problem is his nose. And I love the way Father Mulcahy is being so genuine. He's like, come on, we can just say it. We can just talk like normal people. And one of my favorite Father Mulcahy jokes, in addition to just glancing up toward God for comedic effect, is the, Father, I'm not Catholic. Well, nobody's perfect. You know, I love it.
Oh, Father.
Oh, Father. Private Baker says, you know, you're staring right at it, Father. Oh, well, if you mean your nose, of course I do. It's just the three of us in here. But it becomes apparent that he really wants to have his nose altered because it has been a source of frustration and ridicule for his entire life. So Father Mulcahy, as we know him to do, takes that concern to heart and goes to the two people he knows could solve this problem. And that is Hawkeye and Trapper. And to be fair, I will give Hawkeye and Trapper credit in this scene. They primarily at first are like, hey, you don't need to do this. You're a wonderful person. Yeah, you got a big nose. You're fabulous. Don't change a thing. You're beautiful. Which I love. I love that they're just not like, yeah, sure, we'll find a doctor for you. They're like, no, do you really want this? Like, I appreciate that about them very much. Hawkeye has an excellent Napoleon joke. One weirdly for what this episode is, one of my favorite little jokes Hawkeye shoots off in the early seasons. While reassuring Private Baker, he asked, "Do you know why Napoleon kept his hand in his jacket?" He was scratching his nose, and that is such a great joke, and it has the effect he wants. It kind of breaks Private Baker's like, "Oh, woe is me" cycle. And even Trapper too, he's trying to encourage, like, "Hey, you don't need to do this. But they come to realize after he explains, like, it's been a constant source of ridicule, constant jokes. They then explain, well, we would, but it's an easy operation, but it's a specialty. If we're going to do it, we don't want to do it haphazardly. We want it done right and safe. They finally decide, you know what, we're going to help you out. We're going to try to find a way to make it happen. As they are to do, because they're Hawkeye and Trapper. Henry reminds them in the next scene, cosmetic surgery is against army regulations. You can't just do surgery for the sake of doing surgery on the military's dime. But don't you worry, because Hawkeye's got a friend. Major Stash, down in Tokyo, is a plastic surgeon who is doing... Before we shit on Major Stash, he's doing burn therapy at Tokyo General. He is putting his skills to use, helping burn victims who have been injured as a result of the war. We're going to take a moment. We're going to applaud. Yes, good. Dr. Stash, we love that. Because it's probably the only nice thing we're going to say about him. Hawkeye says, "Hey, I'm friends with him. We did our residency together. I know him. I can make it happen." Radar puts the call through. Hawkeye is trying to wheel and deal him down there. Stash isn't having it. And then Hawkeye hits him with, "Oh, man, that's unfortunate. The Barracuda was really looking forward to meeting you. She'll be really disappointed. And Stash will be here in 2 hours."
Barracuda.
So yes, Hawkeye has made up a fictional nurse hey, props to Hawkeye for just not using hot lips. Like, props to him for just not, like, "Hey, Major Houlihan's a person that we can use to our advantage." Like, thank God. That would have been the thing that would have taken that episode down to like a one for me. Because it's not that low, I'll be honest. That may have, if they had used Margaret as the object of affection intentionally, that would have brought this episode down to a one or less. But fortunately, the writers did not do that. And weirdly enough, that's going to bring us right about to the halfway point of the episode. So I'll ask, what were your thoughts up to here, Ethan? Because this is... we're very firmly in the lineup for a lot of the type of episodes we've gotten before. Like, this is very much a pattern we've seen in MASH episodes before. So what how are you feeling up to this point?
Look, I'm not a fan of a scheme a week. I'm just not.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a really weird scheme.
Like, yeah, it's kind of the premise is kind of, I don't want to say out there, but like,
okay, I want to say out there.
A nose job. Okay. Like,
what was going on in the writing room?
I don't know. That's kind of why. Because again, I think I said it at the end of season one as we were getting ready for season two. Season one was a lot of scheme a week, very goofy. Season two has done less of that, but there's still a couple episodes that are very like, man, whoa, that's a lot all at once as far as that style of episode. I will say, and it's hard not to compare this episode directly to Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts, which is the other episode we've seen Stuart Margolin in, Stash's actor. It's hard not to compare the two because it's a very similar setup. He's called in as a favor by one of the main cast. while he's there, shenanigans ensue, yada yada yada, and also he attempts to physically assault Margaret. Like, hate that those are the parallels, but it's weird because I really don't like bananas, crackers, and nuts, and I don't love this episode, but if I had to choose one between the two, it'd be this one.
Really?
I don't know exactly why. It might be because Stodge is on our side this time, as opposed to Frank and Hot Lips' side. He's not an adversary to our dynamic duo. He's a partner. That might be it. But yeah, I don't know. I feel weirdly, and I don't know how to explain it yet.
We'll get there.
So Stodge arrives, played by, as we mentioned, Stuart Margolin. We've seen him before. He was Dr. Sherman, the psychiatrist in Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts, who Margaret called up as a favor and who he is crazy for. Stuart Margolin did pass away recently. I think it was right at the end of 2022. Yeah, it was right at the end. It was about the time we were actually doing Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts. I think it was like a few months before. Prolific actor, character actor. And here's the thing. Ignoring Stodge's character, I think I like Stuart Margolin better in this episode just overall. Like, I think Stuart Margolin is genuinely charismatic and funny. It's just he got put in two weird MASH episodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I like Stodge a little more because he is a little bit more like bubbly and silly, whereas Dr. Sherman was a little more curt and flavorless, for lack of a better term. But so Stodge arrives immediately. Doesn't even get, barely gets off of his Jeep. And a nurse walks by and she's like, "Hi, Hawkeye, hi." And he's like, "Hi." Like, is she that she's not the one? Okay. And so it begins. Again, for the episode it's in, it is kind of a great moment. Henry comes walking across the camp in his bathrobe. "Henry, who broke my doll?" And Stuart Margolin has what might be the funniest reply in this entire episode to anything. "I didn't know you guys had a mental ward." Which, yeah, if you just showed up to MASH and you see Henry Blake in fishing cap robe holding a kimono, a kabuki doll, screaming, you'd be like, who is that? That seems concerning. But Henry is kind of infatuated with the work that Dr. Stodge does. He's trying to guess what famous people he's worked on. Stodge, to his credit, is like, "Yeah, I'm not entertaining this." They lead him to the VIP tent where they are, of course, interrupted by the busybodies, Margaret and Frank. Once again, immediately, Dr. Stodge's locks in on Margaret, and I just creepy. It's creepy. It's very weird. "Did anyone tell you with a little work you could have the jowls of a goddess? I often find they're the most sensual part of a woman after the soft underside of the kneecap."
After the soft underside.
I'm not gonna lie. Kneecap might be weirder than feet. You know, like,
I don't want to know. 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 You know what? The weird thing is, for all of like 10 seconds there before he just completely went off the rails, Margaret looks genuinely like, "Wow, what a compliment. Thank you." Like, and then it just gets weird. Like, mm-hmm. If you had stopped talking about 30 seconds ago, which, oh my god, it's so weird to see this from the outside.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being around somebody who just needs to stop talking 30 seconds before they do?
Man, if only. So Margaret is both kind of she's like half offended, but also half, I don't want to say turned on, but she's like, she's a half charmed, half offended, which is kind of my favorite thing.
Charm-fended.
I don't like what you say, but the way you say it is so, yeah.
I like your funny words, magic man.
Pretty much. If you ever want to reach me, I'm at Tokyo General. Leave the message, Jowls. I'll know. God, but he says it so sincerely and so, like, romantically that it's like, again, weird character, loves Stuart Margolin's performance. It's so good.
If it wouldn't get me arrested, I would say that to a woman in real life. But it would, and quite frankly, should get me arrested if I were to just say, just leave the message, Jowls. I'll know. Jowls.
So they meet up with Private Baker. He's flipping through his little flip chart of nose shapes, which I really hope there's a more sophisticated way of picking a permanent feature. Well, I guess not permanent if he could change it, but I feel like the hastily drawn Sharpie silhouettes are not the play. But hey, you know, whatever.
You know, it's a war zone. You work with what you got, I think. But then again, I didn't know anything about plastic surgery. Maybe, mm-hmm. I mean, God, do you think it's like in a barber shop where they've just got posters of, you know, different haircuts and you can just, I'd like a number 14, please. Oh, yes, the high and tight. Do you think, huh.
Okay, that leads me to a couple interesting thoughts I just had all at once. Number one, I bet you in the next 10 years if they're not already doing this, I'd be shocked. I bet in the next 10 years we see where, like, you'll get a picture taken or a 3D scan done of you, and then not AI necessarily, but, like, computer generation will be good enough that you could, or, like, photo manipulation would be good enough that you could see, be like, here's what your face would look like if we did this, you know, if we change. If they're not already doing some sort of, like, photo adjustment to, like, give you a sense of what you would look like after a certain cosmetic operation, I don't doubt that will be a thing in the near future.
Beauty, micrometer, and the Photoshop. That would be mm-hmm. the current combination, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thought. My other question is, what is your going to the barber, what is your, like, your order, for lack of a better term? What is your standard cut?
So, you know...
The audience doesn't know. I want the audience to know from someone who's not Ethan before he says this. My boy got coif. My boy has, if depending on how he be choosing to wear his hair, he got a lovely coifness about him, and I don't know how else to describe it other than that.
I liked, so I usually take some pride in my hair in the mornings. It encourages me to get out of bed and shower. So mm-hmm. I'll use some pomade and, like, slick it back on the tops and the sides. And so when I go into the barber, I tell him, give me just enough length on the sides and top that I can style it if I want to without me looking like a hobo like I mm-hmm. normally do. Because I will go 2 or 3 months between haircuts. Like, mm-hmm. I will go mm-hmm. until it is unmanageable, and then I'll reach this weird stage where I think, maybe I should just grow it out and see what happens there. And then I get too lazy, or my head is already large, so finding hats that can fit my large head and hair,
yeah,
it gets difficult. So, but mm-hmm. because of my recent move, I've been forced to abandon my longtime barber, and a man and his barber is a sacred bond.
So here's the thing: I'm not fancy. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the person who I probably could have considered my barber had I gotten older. But he closed his shop. Did you ever go to the guy here in Newcastle who had the weird little barber shop?
I did not, no.
His name is Bill. Goofy man, but excellent barber. But I'll typically just go, like, every 5 or 6 weeks to Great Clips. I'm not fancy. I'm not proud. It's nice because my haircut is not complicated. It's 5 on the top, 3 on the sides. It's it's something that once I feel like I got have a good enough set of clippers and am proficient enough, I can do at home. And it's not that's a nice length because it's nice and short for in the summer, but it also isn't so short that you don't have to wait for it to grow out in the winter. It's like that it's a good middle. Sometimes I'll go a little shorter, but then I start looking like, you know, a skinhead reject, and that is not a thing that I want.
I got buzz cuts for most of my life until
you did. Like
my first day as a sophomore in high school, my psychology teacher made a remark about me being a skinhead, and that very day I started growing my hair out.
Like, never again. Thank you. Yep. Mm-hmm. Which, damn, what a comment for a teacher to fucking make.
A psychology teacher, no less. Which means...
Fucking Christ.
He either was the worst psychology teacher ever, or he was the best. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he was like, ah, yes, this child needs to hear this. It's the only way he will change his ways.
I have to stop absentmindedly playing with the little twisty knob on my mic. No, the thing that I've been trying to get a little better with is like the beard and mustache. Like, just, no, I don't like the super hard, crisp lines people get. Like that looks a little weird sometimes. But just better about keeping it a uniform length, and a uniform spot on my face, not letting it get like the weird little like. You know how on some people they won't like manage the edges of their beard, and so they'll have little patches come. You know, it won't be. Yeah. I'm not looking for like a straight, I did it with a straight edge, but I don't want like a climbing patch of stubble up both cheeks from where the main beard is, if that makes sense.
I get you.
But yeah. And then I've been actually unintentionally, because I set the guard on my trimmer wrong, I unintentionally did shorter beard, longer mustache recently. Longer mustache? Not bad. Like, and when I say longer, I never let my facial hair get more than like a quarter inch. Maybe half inch max in the winter. I'm not a big beard guy. I'm more of a, hey, I want a little bit of something on my face so I don't look like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, we leave that for you, big beard booty daddy.
Right as I'm taking a drink, thank you.
You're welcome.
And then my third thought I had is, I can't believe we're about to potentially get really deep on this episode.
Oh my god.
If you could, is there anything you would change via plastic surgery or similar? Huh. Or you can say, shut the fuck up, Anthony. That's a personal question.
No, the only thing I would say is I would like consider liposuction, but that's not really plastic surgery. No, that's,
I would say cosmetic surgery, a non-necessary cosmetic surgery, which liposuction, again, forgive me, audience, if I'm saying something ignorant and not right. I believe liposuction is usually just a cosmetic thing, but...
Well, and even that would take me some convincing. Like, I don't know.
Same. I've often thought, man, it'd be nice to just, like... And again, I don't say this in like a self-harm way, but in like the very cartoony, like Tom and Jerry way of, man, it'd be nice to just like make a little cut, stick a vacuum hose in and be thin. Like, that would be nice. But that's not how the world works. Also, that doesn't solve the base problem of I need to be more active and I need to eat smaller portions. Like, yeah, that fixes the problem temporarily, but you still need to change the way you live. Like, but that's a lifestyle choice most of the time. There are health reasons why that is hard for some people. Please don't come at me. But same
but
with
in
the
terms
people who...
of like actual like plastic cosmetic surgery, that sort of thing, I like me well enough. I might consider taking a saw blade to the two toes on each foot that are webbed together.
See, now that's something where that's a quick outpatient thing. Yeah. That's something you could realistically have done.
You know, I want to
modern medicine is insane.
In case the audience, you know, tuned out for a second, two of my toes on each foot are webbed. I have the toenails on both.
Yep, that is a fact about you. I constantly forget until you bring it up.
I know.
All right. So. for me, there is a very obvious, if you know me, elephant in the room. When I was born, I need to look up the term for this because it's a fancy medical term. I was born with a hemangioma underneath my right eye, a strawberry birthmark, for those of you not familiar. It's essentially, it's not a tumor. It's a non-cancerous growth. It's just, my body was like, damn, we do be making cells like crazy in this particular area, like a lot. It's essentially a clump of blood vessels and a growth that forms during the stages of development during a pregnancy and right after you're born. It was under my right eye. Ethan's seen me do this at parties, and if the audience is, if I hate the audience enough, I'll post a video of me doing it. The treatment for it is lots of steroids to basically kill the growth, which is probably going to lead to some long-term health effects. And it's from what my doctors told me when I was younger, it's probably why I put on weight easily. Plus a bunch of other stuff. But it stopped the growth, but that means all the tissue underneath my right eye, when it was growing, it pushed the eyeball up and out. Sorry if I'm getting too graphic. You can hit the skip 15 button. So if I look directly at you, it was really bad when I was a kid, but even Ethan, you've known me long enough, you probably don't see it as much anymore. But if I stare directly at someone and mention it, my right eye looks bigger than the other because it's pushing out and opening the lid further.
The first time you did that to me was the first time I ever drank with you. I go hard in the paint, so by this time I was already pretty buzzed, and then
you thought I was peeling my face off.
Yeah.
So what I was gonna say is all that growth is now scar tissue under my eye. So it looks like I have a really baggy right eye. It's just scar tissue, which means because that eyeball sits higher in the orbital socket and is out forward further, I can push on that scar tissue into my eye socket, and it freaks the fuck out of people. The trade-off also is because that eye got pushed out further, the muscles that hold the eye in place and move it around are loose. So if I roll my eyes, my right eye and left eye will roll, but then my right eye kind of has to, like, reloading, centering, and we're back. I am slightly cross-eyed. Some people pick up on it right away. Some people don't notice it until I say it.
Well, and that's the thing. I never noticed it until you said it. It's like, it's just one of those things that I like, if you had never mentioned it to me, I never would have known.
Well, and it was kind of an insecurity when I was younger because so here's the thing. Fun story. And weirdly, somewhat like 5% St. Patrick's Day related.
Oh boy.
So having a strawberry a birthmark on hemangioma in my eye, it's common. But it is a specialty. Like, you have to get the right kind of doctors to look at it. Not because the hemangioma itself is, like, a dangerous thing to deal with. It's not. It's because I'm an infant. And it's like, any medical stuff with infants, especially, this would require surgery. And we'll get to it. Some fun things. You need a specialist. So my parents are like, so what's the prognosis? And the pediatrician and the other doctors told my parents, so there is a... My brother just screamed from the dark side of the shop. I'm like, what the
fuck? Oh, I heard. Yeah, it freaked me out too.
Where was I? So they told my parents, look, there's a chance he could be blind in his right eye. You need to see a specialist, figure out what the steps forward are. We don't know. That's why you need to talk to him. They flew a specialist from Ireland. They got up at like 3 a.m, went down to San Francisco to meet him at his office at 6. They kept my parents waiting for like an hour. He came in. First thing he said to my parents is, so your son's going to be blind. Not even a discussion. Like, not even a, so here are the options. My dad almost went over the desk and punched that man. Like, fortunately.
That's just forward, a traditional Irish hello. Like, okay, first of all.
No, basically he's like, no discussion of like what it is. Very nonchalantly, barely looked up from the paperwork. Yeah, so your son's going to be blind. He's right. Not a whole lot I can do about it. That was not the answer my parents were wanting. Not necessarily not the answer they wanted. It's like, can we have any more discussion about this? Or are you just like writing it off now? So fast forward a few years, got another optometrist, Dr. Sanderfield. Shout out to her one time. lots of work, lots of appointments, lots of wearing patches over my left eye to force my right eye to do the work. Because your brain, and I'm sure people have noticed this, if you lose one sense, your other senses compensate. If you have bad vision in one eye, your other eye compensates to take over. And that is not a thing you want in someone small whose body is still developing, because you will train this eye to basically be a vestigial, which is not what we wanted. So like 8 hours, like 6 hours a day from the time I was like two to the time I was like six, had a patch over my left eye to force my right eye to develop, to take in optical information and be my primary source of vision. Had to get a surgery where they lifted my eyeball out of its socket. They banded one of the muscles so that my eye would not be like a fucking googly eye doll eye just bouncing around. After that surgery, like a year after, Dr. Sanderfield said, "Anthony, if you would like, we can do they explained to my parents, it's part of my medical coverage, it's not an extra thing. But you're young enough that your body will grow and adapt to this. We can go in and stitch your eyelid shut a little bit on one side. So, because you're not going to, your eyes are done growing. They're as big as they're going to get. We've set everything in place. You're going to have a little bit of a lazy eye, but we can go in and close your lids a little bit artificially, and it'll grow, it'll heal that way so that your eyes look the same size." And I would love to go back in time and slap six-year-old me. Six-year-old me heard needles, eye, and went, "No, thank you." Even though five-year-old me just had his eye lifted out of his socket, six-year-old me's like, "No, that's too much." So, cool. I got mad-eye, moody, like, all-seeing eye for the rest of my life. But hey, you know, it's no big deal. And again, shout out to Dr. Sanderfield. I was told there was like a 95% chance I was going to be blind in my right eye. I can drive and I shoot right eye dominant. So, not just shoot right eye dominant, I basically did really well in a sport that not only includes shooting, but tracking a moving target, which you need peripheral vision to do. My peripheral vision sucks dick because my right eye is 20/40, but I'm not blind. So, yay. So yeah, long story short, if there was a cosmetic surgery I get, it would go back in time and close the lid a little bit. But I didn't, so here we are.
And I love you just the way you are.
Are you still awake, audience? But so yeah, that's it. I can't think of anything else. I should absolutely lose some weight, but that's not something I want to solve via surgery. That's a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, I will reiterate, for me, I would like it to be a lifestyle choice. I know other people, surgery is absolutely a thing that can help with that and is sometimes necessary. I'm not saying that if you're a bigger person, getting surgery is like the weak person's way up. That's not what I'm saying at all. I am not comfortable with the idea of, hey, you're fat because you eat too much and you aren't active enough, so go solve it by throwing money at the problem and getting a surgery that ultimately is not going to fix what is core, the thing causing it for you. So that's kind of where I'm at. That nice big tangent about self-care and body image. That's nice. That's fun. Again, shout out to Dr. Sanderfield. Woo. Anyway, back to the borderline weird Dr. Stage. Sergeant Baker picked out a nose he liked. So now the wheels are set in motion for the boys to pull a fast one, as they are to do on Margaret and Frank. So Radar acquires a pass for Private Baker from Henry, who has to be reminded, like, hey, don't ask too many questions because you didn't want to know about this, right? Right. Sign the paper, Henry. Sign the paper and smile. Baker is made to appear that he has gone out of camp for R&R to deal with the stress that has been causing him to want to leave camp. He obviously doubles back into camp, and they set up a scenario like this is... Margaret and Frank could pull at any one of the strings on this, and it comes apart, but they're Margaret and Frank, so they don't. Mulcahy and Radar are playing catch. Frank comes and gets involved and just makes an ass of himself by chucking the ball right into the dirt. Trapper comes in and starts playing catch, and the first domino, the next domino in the chain falls when Trapper breaks Radar's nose, quote unquote, with the baseball, which, yeah, that was convincing.
Good enough for government work.
Yeah, good enough for government work. But, I mean, to be fair, Margaret and Frank are not complete idiots. They're like, that was weird. Like, have you ever seen something been walking down the road and, like, it seemed very Matrix-y. It seemed like that was like an interaction in a video game. Kind of, for example, like Red Dead Redemption, you'll be like riding along or walking along, and like one of those like random encounters happens, and you're like, huh, that was weird. Anyway, that's kind of what that felt like. Like Margaret and Frank were just walking through camp, and all of a sudden, like Radar's nose got broken in the, like, it feels like if they walked through the camp like 2 months from now, like that's one of those random things in the background that could happen. Like the guy getting kicked to death by his horse in Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, yeah, that's just going to happen every couple play, every time you get on. But, so they are, their bullshit detector is going off a little bit. So, while they are trying to follow into OR, Baker is hiding behind a tent waiting for them to leave. Ethan, what causes them to go, to forget that they were trying to figure out what happened to Radar?
Sergeant Baker on the intercom.
No.
Giving a major announcement.
That is not Todd Sussman. At least I don't believe it to be. There are two gentlemen over the course of the series that do the voices of the PA. Todd Sussman is one. I do not know for sure if he is doing it in this episode. I don't think, I listened to it a couple times. I don't think it's Todd Sussman again. It'd be kind of great if they could make it like, but here's the thing. He's not, Private Baker is not in the MASH universe, the other guy on the speaker.
Well, yeah. I get so that. That's where it's Sussman's like, name.
No, the some of the other announcements you hear, particularly later into the series, is Sal Viscuso, who will also have a couple episodes where he appears on screen as an extra character. So, yeah, fun times. So the explanation is Stodge never lets people, other people watch his work. Which may, that's a plausible thing. Like he's a big shot Hollywood movie star doctor.
Yeah,
that could make sense. Baker makes it in. They can't find Stodge, and of course, where is Stodge? But following Margaret, he follows Margaret into supply and basically calls her out and says, "You're the Barracuda." And it's basically shot for shot redo of Dr. Sherman being like, "Oh, it's true," and grabbing Margaret from behind. I hate to say it, some of the little lines he has during this are fucking just great to me. They're hilarious. Let go of me or I'll scream. You'll scream, you'll sing, you'll become a symphony. Just that might be hot. If any of this was consensual. Margaret grabs the wooden rod and says, "I'll crack you across the face with this." He pulls off his hat. "I knew I could count on you." Jesus Christ. He's a little too into it. Speaking of being a little too into it, as Hawkeye takes Stodge away, Trapper comes in to comfort Margaret, and we get a very interesting little interaction. There, Miss Margaret. Nothing bad will happen to you less than you leave old Uncle Trapper's arms. And Margaret's like, huh.
I could have really fallen for you, you know that, you son of a gun.
Yep. Not you, him. So Stash is working. Frank finds Radar on the phone with not a broken nose. I love Radar's explanation that it's just sprained, and if he stays off it for a week, it should be fine. Radar's already got plan three in place. He's calling Frank's wife to distract Frank. And I love this little interaction. Frank is talking to his wife. Margaret comes in, hears him say, "Oh, honey, it's so nice to talk to you." Who the hell is that? Immediately. And I love Larry Linville is great on how he tries on his acting here. He's like, Major Houlihan just came in. Hi, Jim. Ever tell you about my friend, Major Houlihan? Swell guy. You would have liked him. Margaret and Frank come in after the surgery while they're washing up. And they say, you can't hide surgery on the nose. We'll know who you operated on. It'll be dead easy to do. You know, whatever. And they step outside after Hawkeye confirms the Trapper that everything is ready. And every single member of the camp is wearing just one strip of gauze tape over their nose, which I feel like if Frank and Margaret were as angry as they said, it would not take long to it would not take long to get someone there who would be on Frank and Margaret's side to say, all right, everyone bandages off. Who is it? Like, but I'm bummed. Hawkeye and Trapper have gotten away with it. So they've gotten away with it. And I love that they just walk through the compound and look back toward Frank and Margaret and just kind of shrug like, damn, like this is going to be like 8 levels deep for Ethan, but for the audience, it'll be fine. They basically look back, they look around at everyone wearing the bandages, they look back at Frank and Margaret, shrug, and just kind of like a, damn, that's crazy. And they just walk away. They just go off into the universe. But our button scene is Stash is leaving, and he mentions that he got a farewell that he'll have to write up in a medical journal, alluding to the fact that someone is the Barracuda. We don't know who, but someone is. And I just realized in watching the scene, his nickname is Stash. His real name is Major Robbins. So I'm an idiot. But anyway. And that is Operation Noselift, Ethan.
Yep.
What are your thoughts now that we're at the end? What are your thoughts? Give me the breakdown.
I'm not going to fault it for being schema weak. That's just by virtue of being a television show in the 70s. I am going to fault it for the plot. I will not hold a schema week against you if you will not give me this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know that we've kind of been talking a lot of shit on this episode, and I'm going to feel really bad if there's viewers out there who really like it. I will give it this. It has a lot of good jokes.
Pause everything. Pause everything.
Hello.
All right. Where were we? Podcast was momentarily interrupted by the visitation from the niece and nephew. So, Stuart Margolin. Let's talk about Stuart Margolin for a second, because I feel like my boy got shortchanged. He's on two very weird MASH episodes, but damn if he's not fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it's important to separate the character from the actor. He is such a good actor that I genuinely dislike his character in both of these episodes. But you can tell, like, he's got some serious talent. And I think we talked about this originally, but I'm almost certain he's in a Dukes of Hazzard episode or two. I'm familiar mm-hmm. with him as an actor. And I know that I've enjoyed work I've seen with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, with that being said, Ethan, what would you rate? And I'm curious to see, because I'm gonna compare it one to one with how we rated Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts, just because it's similar kind of plot. Like, there's shenanigans. Stuart Margolin's here. Margaret. It's very much Margaret and Frank versus Hawkeye and Trapper, and Stuart Margolin is on either side in each episode. So, what would you rate, Operation Noselift?
2.1 out of 5.
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay.
Funny, but that's not going to carry it as far as it might otherwise. How about you?
I'm going to rate it 2.9. I something about giving it the solid 3 doesn't sit right with me. Mm-hmm. But it's not a bad episode. It's just kind of a, like, okay, we've seen this shtick before type episode. But I did rate it higher than I rated Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts.
What did I rate Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts?
What would you rate Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts right now? The one where Hawkeye's pretending to be homosexual and pretends to eat a patient's liver to go on R&R, and they call Sherman and chaos ensues, and Sherman's like, no, this is weird. Even if you're faking it, I'm taking you with me. So what would you rate that episode right now?
The scenes from that episode that come to mind are the funny ones, where, like, when he's in the mess
drunk Henry.
Yeah, exactly. So probably 3, or in that ballpark, between 2.8 and 3.2.
Okay. Okay, that makes so you liked the kind of vibe of that episode more than this episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're flip side of the coin, basically. I like this episode a little bit more. I think it is because Stuart Margolin isn't playing the brusque, kind of unfeeling character. He's kind of the fun, goofy character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you did rate it a little bit higher than the margin you gave, though.
Oh, okay, good.
You gave it a 3.5. A 3.5. So, but hey, that's all right. That's why I like asking right after you've seen it and get that, like, initial feedback. But
well, the way I kind of do my ratings is I think of it, you know, as a college student at a score out of 100, and I think, okay, you know,
you do the math. Yeah, you do. The
yeah,
math,
and yeah. Then I do the math and do that down to 5 stars, because the 5 stars is, of course, the good rating system for that sort of thing. But
oh yeah. Okay.
So that's just
not
peak.
Not bad. Solid episode. Not one of the greats, but not one of the terribles. And again, I've said it before, there's few what I would call genuinely bad episodes of MASH. There's a lot of really good. There's a lot of pretty good. There's a few that are really just knock it out of the park. And there's a few that are like, okay, yeah, this one's on. There are not many that are shut it off and stop watching, but this is not one of them. So I'll quickly bounce over to the Patreon, because, like I said earlier, I forgot to post the nice little next episode graphic on all the different places. We do not have comments from the Patreon. I will read a comment because it just popped up and I didn't see it when we did the last episode. Our friend and guest of the podcast, Leanne, AKA Bella Sissa on Twitter. She left a comment on the last episode. We were talking about how the actors, a lot of the actors on MASH are for some reason really tall. She mentioned she's listening half through the podcast, and we're talking about the actors' heights. Her son at 22 years old is 6'8" with size 18 feet, long hair, and a full beard. His grandfather calls him Hagrid.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
Ethan, as my tallest and biggest footed friend, thoughts? I believe he outclasses you in all three categories, or all four categories: hair, beard, foot size, and height.
Yeah. So the thing about being 6'4", 6'5" my whole life is I've developed a bit of a little man syndrome, in the sense of when I am immediately exposed to somebody who is larger than me, it is so alien and so
it is because it's so rare.
Yeah. For you. It messes with me. Like it takes me a second to get my bearings. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. You know what? It's odd.
Because you're aware you're taller than the average person. And then when someone's taller than you, you're like, you're doing the math in your head of like, oh, you're big compared to the average person.
Yeah, exactly. But nice. We miss you. Bellis is the best to you, your grandfather, and your Hagrid.
Your Hagrid. And I guess this one wasn't posted by the time, so I'll read it for the last episode. For want of a boot, 4 out of 5 from Lewis Black. Is it Lewis or Louise? It's Louise. There's an I in it. It's Louise. I love this episode. Is it Lewis or Louise? Oh, God. I'm so sorry. Lou.
Louise would have an E at the end.
It does have an E at the end. Okay. Yeah, podcast people, in case you haven't noticed from some of the posts we've made over the years, I can't spell. And I certainly can't pronounce things sometimes, so sorry. 4 out of 5 for want of a boot from Louise Black. I love, love, love this episode. Pretty sure it's the first MASH episode they ever saw. Remember watching it with my dad when I was really little, listening to him laugh. There's not much in the way of plot or nuance, but this episode has always given me warm, cozy, fuzzy feelings, and I love it forever. God bless. There's nothing wrong with that. I would say for want of a boot is not a bad first episode of MASH. It's silly and engaging. But yeah, I forgot to put one up for this week, so that's not there, but I will read off as I should. Man. Okay. You want to be shocked, Ethan? We have a new member.
I am shocked.
Ethan doesn't believe that this is really a thing that's happening.
I don't.
We have a couple new people. And by a couple, I mean one, because I can't count either. We would like to welcome Corporal Derek B., to the group, along with Private Stuart Boyles, Private Carrie Ahern, Private Jared Gallagher, Sergeant Timothy Burleson, Sergeant Louise Black, Lieutenant Mike Jameson, and Lieutenant Leanne. You guys, again, make this podcast pay for itself, and dare I say it, we're starting to put a little bit of money into savings.
Yeehaw.
And in exchange for not having a post for you to leave comments and ratings and stuff on the Patreon, immediately after recording this, we're going to post something very special for the Patreon members that you guys get to see for the first time before anyone else. So if you're hearing this, go over there and check it out and give us your thoughts. And for the rest of you, don't worry.
It's just my feet pics.
No, it is absolutely not going to be that.
Damn.
Oh, you said that, and somehow we immediately lost 3 members. Even though this isn't live, dang.
Yeah.
That's something. So Patreon people, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. The fact, I will say, I joke that Ethan is shocked every time I say people listen to this podcast and give us money because they like this podcast. I kind of too am shocked. Like, we started the Patreon just to see, like, if people would be interested. The fact that the podcast is no longer a burden to make financially, and it actually is net positive, is kind of mind-boggling, and that means we can do more. We don't have to worry about going on little tangents or having fun conversations with guests. We don't have to try to keep that time down. We probably should. We should probably not do episodes longer than an hour, just for the you know, general podcast analytics and rules of how you should be making something. But you guys listen to it anyway, so we're gonna keep making it however we've been making it. So thank you.
Although, please feel free to provide input.
Yep, your input is always welcome. And that goes for everyone outside of the Patreon as well. You guys have been really cool about giving us your thoughts and feedback about not just about the episodes of MASH we talk about, but about the show itself. So thank you so much. Moving on from that, we'll go over to the Hell site, formerly known as Twitter, to discuss some people's thoughts about this episode. Again, not many because of how late I put it out. But our friend McJameson, who I will really quick say, I have had a chance to listen to the first half of the first episode. This is a plug, but it's not a sponsored plug. This is from the hip, thinking to say it when I read his name. Our friend, this lightsaber kills fascist, Mick Jameson, has his own podcast. It is Masked Faces and Secret Bases. It is a podcast all about the wonderful world of classic comic books. So if you are even remotely interested, go give that a listen, because I know that is a big passion of his and of a lot of the couple guests he had on the first couple episodes. Go give it a listen. I know nothing about comic books, and I was entertained and informed. So please go check that out. But he says, hey, remember when I said I'd defend the more questionable aspects of early MASH? Yeah, what the hell was up with Stuart Margolin? Was he just filed under sex creep for casting agents? 3 out of 5 martinis. Still funny, but it hasn't aged well.
You'll scream, you'll cry, you'll become a symphony.
You'll scream, you'll sing, you'll become a symphony. That's... there's some obvious mega cringe moments, says Transplant Rockstar. Setting him aside for the review, Henry's dictation is hilarious. The hijinks ensuing despite Margaret and Frank's best attempts to stop it is such a great staple of MASH. 4 out of 5, but the cringe limits its watch again potential. That's mm-hmm. a great way to put it. Like, the episode itself is okay, it's good, but it's that couple of cringy aspects. It's like, okay, yep, and we've seen it. Shuffle it to the back of the pile. And Paul Mitchell says, a typical series 2 episode, lots of shenanigans from Trapper and Hawkeye to fool Margaret and Frank. Stuart Margolin plays a different but identical obnoxious... I love this term. He plays a different but identical obnoxious sex pest as he did before. He is utterly viable. Despite that, I do enjoy... Everyone has said, I hate how they wrote this character. But damn, it do be kind of a watchable episode, though. I love that. 3.9 out of 5 from Paul. And that is all we got. Again, it's one of those episodes. We did go off on some good tangents. I'm excited to say, and I'm hopeful, everyone cross your fingers. Give your rabbit's foot a big rub. Next episode is Chosen People. We're going to see Pat Morita again. Some really, really... I would, in a weird way, say this episode is kind of like Deal Me Out, where there's a thing happening in camp, and you just kind of see everyone reacting to it. Very Deal Me Out, very Chief Surgeon Who kind of vibe. But there's some really good moments in this episode, and I am excited because we are trying to work out getting our... everyone's favorite half Korean Tyler back on the show. He was with us, if you all remember, from the Snafu'd recording and re-recording of The Moose way back in season 1. We're trying to get him on. He has graduated from certified nursing assistant to EMT, so working around his schedule is going to be interesting, but we're hoping to get him on for that. Other than that, we have a couple guests lined up between now and the end of the season, but we're coming up on the run up to the finale, which has some really solid, good episodes that I can tell you guys right now we're going to talk about at length. So yeah, it's going to be a fun ride to the end of season 2, and then we can gear up for I already have people telling me, Ethan, what episodes they want to be on for season 3.
That is awesome.
And we're going to have a discussion. I was chatting with Scott, with Best Chief Smash Forever, after the last episode. We might have to think about setting aside a bigger recording session and inviting maybe 2, if not 3 guests on for the end of season 3, because it's such a big moment for the show, both for that season and just kind of where the show kind of pivots. So, again, talking about things that are a year and a half away is not the point of this podcast, but
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I really want to do a table read episode.
He mentioned that as well after we mentioned it. So maybe that's something that I want to do. And in fact, he recommended it. I'm going to recommend to our audience, if you have not gone and listened to MASHcast's two table reads they did for the 50th anniversary, go back and find those episodes. They are hysterical. They're great. I believe they did... I can't remember what two episodes. I think they did Chief Surgeon Who, maybe? Now, I'll have to go look. I don't remember. I don't want to say the wrong ones, but they did table reads of the episodes, and it was really good. Yeah, if we can make that happen, I would like to. And for the audience, the episode we want to do is an episode that never aired. There was a while ago some scripts went around on Reddit of an episode that never aired. It was very rough draft of an episode for season one called Father Hawkeye Knows Best. And you can go look it up and see what the plot is if you want. If you don't want to, I'll keep it secret. But it would have been a real, real weird episode. So that's why it would be kind of fun to do as a table read, because it didn't exist. But again, I could talk MASH forever, and you don't want to be here forever listening to it. We'll save it for the next episode. Ethan, do you have any final closing thoughts?
I intend to dress up as King Neptune again, and there's nothing you or anybody else on God's green earth can do to stop me.
Fair. Final reminder, Patreon members, go over to the Patreon after this and see what we put up for you. We're really excited about it. Until next time, folks, have a great week, 2 weeks, until you hear from us again. Keep watching MASH, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Happy days are here again.